All right, Mike Kopf, K-O-P-F, and this is a question he asked on the blog as well as on the webinar. And I know what my answer to this is, but I thought I'd ask it to you first in case you got something here. He says, I'm in the process, and by the way, it's not short sale specific, but it is deal related. I'm in the process of flipping my first house with a good deal of equity in it. But the taxes are ridiculous, according to my accountant. What is the best tax strategy to avoid paying regular income tax and get to pay only capital gains? I know this may be off topic. I apologize if that's the case, but that's where I am right now. Any help's greatly appreciated.
You know, that's a pretty loaded question, and I'm going to answer it a little vaguely only because I'm not an accountant. I have an accountant that does this stuff for me, and I strategize with him on how to do this. But when it comes to accounting, I am not the best guy to ask for this. I can refer you to somebody who is. But, you know, I can give you two responses. Number one is you need to have some expenses to offset those costs. So I don't know how your books currently look or what type of entity you're buying and selling properties in. But what I did is I sat down with my accountant when I first got started, and I said, what kind of expenses can I run through my business legally, ethically, and morally that can offset some of the income that I'm making off of these houses? And at some point, you know, if we're flipping houses, it is direct income. So at some point, we're going to have to pay taxes. But here's the second part of my response is I have no problem paying taxes. If he's got a huge deal where he's making $50,000, if that means I got to pay a little bit of money in taxes to make a $50,000 check, it's not the end of the world. At the same time, I don't want to pay any taxes that are unnecessary to pay either, especially when there are some smart, legal, ethical, and moral tactics that you can design with a CPA to figure out how to offset some of those incomes with other expenses. So I'll kind of leave it at that. I know that's a little bit vague right now, but a little bit outside of my expertise. Although I know about how to do it in my own business, it's really a question you need to sit down with your accountant and ask them.
Well, I'll just supplement that. You said, Sean, that you don't mind paying taxes on a nice big fat check, and I'll just say I'm the total opposite. I mind big because I think we're way overtaxed, and frankly, I think we should totally do away with the income tax. I'm a huge flat tax proponent. But lest I wax political, let me say, I think the bottom line is probably, the answer probably for you, Mike, is you're going to have to suck it up and pay the taxes, whether you like it or not. There's not a real, like, obvious, every investor knows this workaround kind of thing. And again, I'm not an accountant here either. I believe there's always the 1031 exchange option. If you wanted to try an exchange, do an exchange with your profits, you're still just... it's tax deferred, though. You know, you're not paying taxes now. But
well, there's one more strategy, and this is a little bit more advanced. But you can use your IRA also to buy properties, and there's a whole another class on how to do this. But if you have a self-directed IRA, you can have your self-directed IRA invest in one of these short sale deals that you're pursuing. In other words, the IRA may put up all of the earnest money, for example.
Yeah.
And the income that you make off of the property can be put back into your IRA, certainly tax deferred. Now, there's some strategies to doing that, and there's other companies out there that will literally help walk you through every step of that. So I'll kind of leave it at that for now, but that's a great strategy too, especially if you don't need the cash right now and you're trying to build up a big nest egg. That's a great strategy.
And that's the consequence for that, really, is the money is not – you can't play with it today. You can't use it to pay bills today. That's a strategy where you're obviously building an IRA. A couple of reputable companies, if that's the route you decide to go, Pensco, P-E-N-S-C-O, and Equity Trust are two of the well-known ones a lot of investors will use. So you can just Google them, and I'm sure you'll find them. Now, one other strategy, let's see. If you're, I believe it's been a long time since I've really thought through this, but if you're willing to live in the property for 2 years, which I don't think this is the case you're in right now, but just for general information, if you can live in the property for 2 years and a day, then let's see, what is it? You can write off a certain amount of money for a single or a joint tax return. I can't remember the details.
Yeah, you're allowed to make up to $200,000 on your own personal residence as long as you've not bought or sold another residence within 2 years. Now,
yeah.
Let me, this is off topic again, but I'm going to clarify this for a second because I had a student of mine that sold his house. It was his own personal house. He rented out his own personal house and bought a new house. And then while he was in the new house, at some point, sold his old house. And so his new house he made a bunch of money on 2 years later when he sold it. Only it wasn't 2 years. It was 2 years since he had lived in his current house that he was selling and making a bunch of money. But it was not more than 2 years since he had sold his last house because he rented it out for a little while. So that guy was borderline getting himself in trouble because there wasn't two full years in between sales. And all of a sudden he sells the current house that he lives in. Now he's paying taxes on all that income because it wasn't two full years. So it's 2 years from the last sale, and you have to have lived in that house for 2 years.
There you go. So there you go, Mike. Probably not the answer you were hoping for, but that's our story, and we're sticking to it. I got a question. By the way, I'm getting into the attic. I don't know if that's if you're in a bad area. Are you hearing that, Sean?
I'm not hearing it at all.
It just went away. Okay. Maybe it was just on my end. TR says, this was at some point in the middle of the webinar, what about California where only licensed agents can negotiate the short sale? Will you teach about that?
Yeah. I mean, the fact is there's a couple of states where you have to do that. You have to have a licensed agent actually negotiate the short sale. And in some areas, like Maryland, for example, you cannot negotiate the short sale and be the buyer at all. No way, no how. It's illegal. Matter of fact, if you're the buyer, you can't even contact the homeowner in distress. That's illegal. So you do have to change your strategy a little bit. We do cover that at the event. Of course, we don't cover laws for every single state. Some of this is stuff you're going to want to check with an attorney in your area. But I know enough about what's going on around the country where I can give you some pretty good ideas on specifically what to look for and what kind of questions to ask in your area. But, you can still do them there. You just got to change your approach. You're going to have to partner up with an agent at some point who can do the negotiations for you. Now, what I usually recommend that people do is if they're going to do that, that they send their agent through my training too. I allow you to bring a partner or a spouse for free. And so have both of you come and have the agent learn about the negotiation side and the investor side. That way they know how everything works and they can negotiate even more effectively.
All right, now here's kind of a beefy question. Put on your thinking cap for a second. This is from Ron, and this was on the blog post. The main part of the question is, should I let my daughter and her three kids move back into my defaulted house to maintain it until a buyer closes on it? Now here's kind of the explanation of that. The senior TD, now what does he mean TD? I'm not familiar with that abbreviation. It sounds like from the context, it sounds like he's talking about the senior lien holder, but if you're familiar with TD in some other capacity, let me know. The senior TD / lien holder probably accepted a short sale, and hopefully so will the junior TD who got it from the junior TD owner that I defaulted with. She used to live in it but couldn't keep up with the expense and moved to a home where a family rented her part of their house, a one-bedroom, one-bath. Now she has storage to pay as well as rent, talking about his daughter there.
Mm-hmm.
She's a school worker. She gets no pay in summer, and her first check is spent before it comes the next month. Meantime, the big three-bedroom, two-bath house of mine hasn't been kept up, and the yards need work to show buyers. An offer by an investor has already been turned down by the bank for being too low.
Mm-hmm.
I bought it for $355 in 2007. Now I owe $360, and it's for sale at $160, so I guess the buyer offered less. What are the odds that she moves in and gets it presentable, and a month later she has to move out for a new buyer? Her incentive will be against that if she has nowhere so comfortable to go to. I still have my name on it, but I think it's partially an REO. I think he means practically an REO. What effect will a house sitter have on the decision of the second TD to accept my short sale? On the other hand, it may sit for months empty while she's hurting. So it's kind of an extended explanation, but I thought it might help to get the whole picture.
Yeah. Wow, that's a pretty interesting story. You know, I get people all the time saying, should I stay in my house until the foreclosure? Is it better for me to be in the house versus it just to be vacant and me move out and the lender still not foreclose months down the road? I mean, typically, the lender, you're seeing lenders right now that are allowing homeowners to stay in their houses longer than I've ever seen before. And the reason that they're allowing homeowners to do that is because they would rather a homeowner stay in the house and maintain that house if they're not going to foreclose on it right away. So, matter of fact, in some cases, lenders are going to homeowners and saying, here, we'll give you cash for keys and we'll even let you stay in your house for an additional 6 months if you take care of it and promise to move out and make it clean in 6 months. So we're seeing some of that now. We haven't seen that, not to this extent in the past. You know, having your daughters move back in the house, I mean, it's a judgment call. You've got a couple things to consider. Is having her move back into the house going to make the house more presentable and make it look better to help it sell better? If the answer is yes to that, you know, I don't know that I would be totally against it. Technically, the house is still yours until the house has been foreclosed on. At the same time, you've got to make sure that your daughters know that if they're moving into the house, they may only be there for a week. And so do they really want to move all their stuff in, be there, have another buyer come in, make a legitimate offer in a week, and they have to move out in a couple of weeks? You know, that's certainly a risk that you take. And then when that does happen, is your daughter going to be on board with showing the house and making it look nice? And is she going to be on board with having to move out in a moment's notice? So it's really a judgment call on your part. I don't know. I would want to know a little bit more about the story before giving you – you know, I wouldn't even give you advice anyway, but before I would say whether or not I would do it, I don't know. I mean, at the very least, you need to get the house in presentable condition. If that means as simple as going over there and getting the grass cut or cleaning up the yard or little things that don't cost much money but will help sell the house, that should be first priority. Get the house looking decent enough to where if it's going to take a retail buyer to buy it, get that done.
You know, part of his question is what effect will a quote-unquote house sitter have on the decision of them to accept a short sale? And I don't think it's really going to make a difference on their decision one way or another whether somebody's living in the house. Do you?
Well, it sort of depends. I mean, if it's an FHA loan, FHA requires that the homeowner still live in the house in order to consider a short sale. So the fact that he doesn't live in the house anymore, if it's an FHA loan, he's already denied. Now,
In
some cases, when you have someone living in the house, it appears as though he's still living in the house. But like with FHA, there's something called an approval to participate. And they ask the homeowner, do you still live in the house? And if the answer is no, there better be a good reason why he left. And a good reason might be something like, you know, the house was unsafe or something like that. But a good reason is not, well, we just didn't feel like making the payments anymore. That's not a good enough reason. Then why did you leave is what they're going to ask. So, again, there's some depends here, which seems to be the universal real estate answer, but hopefully that helps.